It's Thursday, everybody. That means we bring in the former boss here in Vancouver. He is a Sportsnet hockey analyst and friend of the show, Mr. Brian Burke. Good morning, Burkey.
Morning, guys.
As a general manager, when you've got a team that's kind of just teetering on the fringe of a playoff spot in the position like Vancouver, what's that like at this time where you're, what, about 6 weeks away from the trade deadline and this team's just kind of hanging in? Is this a tough time to try to evaluate, or is it fun, or is it frustrating or agonizing? What's it like?
Well, first off, you've got to decide whether you're going to be a buyer or a seller or a bystander. And I think right now, I think if you ask Jim Benning, would he be happy being 2 points out of a playoff spot at this point, given the injuries and a couple of rough patches they had, he'd say, darn right, and he'd be happy to be there. The schedule gets so much more favorable for the Canucks now with the World Juniors and the bad road trips early on. They've played just around 65% of their road games already. So now they get better spacing on their games, more practice time. Pettersson's supposed to skate very soon, next day or two. So I think you'd say, we're happy to be where we are. Let's see what we can put together with a better schedule. And then maybe they're buyers at the deadline.
Brian, Alexander Edler, he's the big story in Vancouver. Who's got the leverage? Because GM Jim Benning came out yesterday and said he's our best defenseman. We don't have anyone to replace him. Who's got the leverage in this?
Well, probably both. I mean, that's probably it's probably kind of a gutless answer, but the fact is, he's got a full no trade, no move, if I'm not mistaken. So he's got the ultimate leverage in that if he doesn't want to go anywhere, he doesn't have to. So, but at the same time, I know I don't know Alex Edler. I just know what I've read about him. He loves Vancouver, has loved playing there, would like to stay. So I think, you know, that he's given up some leverage by admitting that. I think they could extend him if they want to. If they're really creative, they could say, we'll talk about an extension in the summer, but if you waive your no trade, no move, let's say they lose 10 of their next 14 and go to him and say, we could get a second and a third for you, maybe a first, because he is playing really well. You know, the issue with Alex has always been injury. Is he going to be healthy at the trade deadline? And he's been racked up so many times in recent years, you don't know that. But if he's healthy, he's probably the best defenseman available if he were to waive his no trade, no move. So I think they've got both have some leverage here. And it's a nice dilemma for Jimmy. You know, if the guy wants to stay, the question then would be term, because he's not a young man. And they could get him extended maybe.
When you're trying to figure out what to do with an asset like that, how much time do you need before the trade deadline to make a decision with a guy who's got a no movement who might be willing to waive it?
You'd like 2 weeks, but you could do with less than that. You could do actually with, if he told you even 72 hours, a player of that stature, if Alex Edler said 72 hours before the deadline that he would waive, that would be plenty of time. Really, you have a lot of time as a GM. You know, it's a day before the deadline, and people are like, oh, my God, they're running out of time. If you've done your homework and broached these different scenarios with GMs so that you're already cognizant of that this might happen. So Jim Benning would say to Brian Burke when he was in Toronto, would you move this guy or that guy? I'd be one. So we've got the pieces that we would each consider moving around the table, and we've had a chance to contemplate those. So if he calls back and says, Edler just waived, what do you want to do? I'd be prepared to give him an answer. So they got lots of time. I think the preferred interval would be 14 days, but they could function with well under that.
And Brian Burke with us here this morning on Sportsnet 650. How do you handle a situation like that? Because you've always kind of said, when we've talked about this, you've never been the guy to go over and ask a guy with a no-movement clause to consider lifting that or waiving that. But how does, like, obviously conversation has to be had. Is that an agent who has that? Is that a wink, wink, a text, an email or a text from a buddy? Like, there's got to be some form of discussion there, isn't there?
Yes. And it depends on the relationship you have with the player. I had this exact situation my first year in Anaheim. I had the late, great Ruslan Soley, Rusty, we called him. He died in the fatal plane crash in Russia. And he was really good for us that year. And he said he got a puck in the forehead in San Jose, and we both went back to Anaheim. He couldn't play. and I was going back anyway. So the team went on, I think, to Vancouver, actually. So we took a limo from LAX back down to Anaheim, and he said, I suppose you're going to trade me. I said, I'm not trading you. I need you. I said, I think this team can make a deep run, and I need you. I said, you're gonna be my rental. I said, I'm not going to trade you. I said, you got to play your ass off for me. We got to take that run, and then I'll help you get the money. So we went to the conference finals. We lost to Edmonton that year, and I helped him get his big contract with Florida. So if Jimmy does nothing with this, that makes perfect sense to me. If he manages to move him and then maybe try to re-sign him again in the summer, that makes perfect sense to me too.
Brian, looking ahead to July 1st, I think the Canucks got to add a winger here. Wayne Simmons, I like him a lot, but Michael Ferland could be there. He's a player you had in Calgary. I know you like Simmons too. Are these the type of guys that you need in the top six?
Well, I'm not sure. Michael Ferland is a real anomaly because he skates and shoots well enough to play in your top six, but he's tough as nails. He's a big body checker and he can fight, so he can round out your bottom six. We never really seemed to sort out exactly which hole that peg went in Calgary, and they appear to be wrestling with it now in Carolina as well. So Simmons to me is the most reliable of the guys. The names that are being tossed around, as far as a guy who would add a physical presence to your team and have some reliability with goal scoring, I think Wayne Simmons would be the top of that list, and he will be in high demand if they don't extend him. Like, again, Chuck Fletcher's public commentary has been that they'd like to extend him if they can. Now it's a question of, he's an older player. There's lots of kilometers on the odometer there. It's the guy who plays, has played hard, and so therefore there's some wear and tear on the frame. But if he's reasonable as determined money, I think their first choice would be to keep him.
Brian, the NHL standings tell me the Flames are second overall in the league. Are you surprised?
Yeah. You know what's fashionable right now? What's fashionable is for teams that are playing really well, for people like me in the media to say, oh, I knew they'd have a good year. I thought they'd be improved. I really liked the trade that Tree made with Carolina. I did not support a coaching change because I thought Glenn Gullickson deserved another year, but I certainly believe in Bill Peters as a replacement. You know, I think he's an excellent coach, so I thought they'd be better, but no, not like this. There's a lot of revisionist history going on right now where people say, see, I told you. And see, I told you Vegas would be good. Well, you know, right now, I remember about 3 weeks into the season, we were on Sportsnet. We're all saying how the Pacific Division looked like a shell of a division, and that five teams in the Western Conference would make the playoffs from the Central Division. Now it's a little different looking. So it's convenient what we forget in the media and what we remember. But no, they're doing way better than I thought they would.
I want to go back to a conversation we had a couple days ago with Nick Kypreos here on this show, and he pointed that the way that Tom Wilson plays and the success that he has, he says, you know, a physical style, there's going to be a pushback or a market correction, if you will, and we're going to see more of this from young players coming in because players to see the way that Tom Wilson and the money he's getting, they'll be inspired to play more that way. Rick was just alluding to the way that, you know, a guy like Simmons is going to be a pending UFA, a guy like Ferland. Do these guys stand to really hit a home run come July 1st here?
Well, I don't know. I don't think any of those guys are as good at it as Tom Wilson. What Tom Wilson is this is a big guy that can really skate, and if you've got a high enough skill level to play on your top six, he actually plays on their top line a lot of the time. Wayne Simmons has never played on the first line, to my knowledge. Michael Ferland a little bit in Vancouver. So I'd say Tom Wilson's kind of he's probably the star of his class in terms of that type of player. But I will tell you, in Calgary last year, this is my final year with the team, we spent an hour in each league saying, where is the next Tom Wilson? Where is he in the Western Hockey League? Where is he in the OHL? Where is he in the Q? Where do we find a big, hostile guy that can skate and make plays? And that guy will carry a premium. I thought it was noticeable last night watching Chicago play. Austin Watson has played that role for Nashville, and they didn't have an answer. They did not have an answer for him. A week before that, or last Monday, they played in Toronto, Nashville did. And Toronto didn't have an answer when Watson started running around. So there's no question when the volume gets up, it turns into, in the playoffs at some point, it turns into big boy hockey. It turns into long pants hockey. So the notion that you can go in and play the same style if you're a soft team and play that way in the playoffs, I think is sadly delusional. So I don't think those guys measure up to Wilson. Wilson's special, but that's the kind of guy that's why Simmons is valuable. That's why Ferland's valuable. And that's why teams are spending so much time now trying to find that guy, because it still matters. Physical play still intimidates people. It's still a very important part of our culture and our game.
Brian, Todd Bertuzzi said yesterday the Canucks need a barking dog to keep the flies away from Pettersson. Do you agree?
Yep. Yep, absolutely. And this is, you know, like, here's the problem. You guys know this. You talk about hockey every day. The game has changed, and it's evolved to a smaller, faster skill game, which is all fine. And no one's going to complain about the quality of hockey. But earlier in the year, there was a lot of flag football going on. And I think the players responded to that criticism and took it to heart and started playing harder, started banging more. And some teams have reacted well to that, and some haven't. But in the playoffs last year, in my view, and of course, I won with a very physical team. We won the cup the year we won with a team that scared the hell out of everybody. That wouldn't work anymore. We were a straight top six, bottom six team. That wouldn't work anymore. You got to be a top nine, bottom three, maybe even top 10, bottom two. But those two guys, if you still have two guys that can get there in a hurry and get there with hostile intentions, they're going to make a difference in a playoff series. They're going to make a difference. And I thought when Vegas started playing Reeves, I thought he neutralized Bufflin in their series with Winnipeg. And I thought that was a factor. I thought Bufflin was a big factor until then. So it still comes into the equation. It's still important. It's still part of our DNA. It's still part of what we sell. So, yes, I agree with Todd Bertuzzi. And I don't think a barking dog so much. I'd like a dog that really bites hard. That's what I'd like for the Canucks.
Brian Burke with us here on Sportsnet 650. The conversation of the CBA has started to creep up. There was some talk about a meeting with the players and the Players Association this week at a conference in Las Vegas. Brian, I don't get a sense that, and you don't have to worry about getting fined about talking about that this time around after all these years. So we can talk a little bit about labor, not that it's the most fun thing, but I don't get a sense that there's a hard line in the sand like we've seen in the last couple of work stoppages where, you know, the idea of a cap, a 50-50 revenue split that we saw in these last couple that we saw reduced seasons or a canceled season. Do you see something getting done sooner rather than later here?
Well, I don't know about the last question, but unfortunately, because I despise doing this on live radio, I have to agree with you, and I
yeah!
loathe that. I loathe having to do that.
Me too.
So here's the last couple CBAs involved work stoppages because the market needed dramatic correction. The industry was bleeding red, and both times it had to take a real hard pull on the player's share for it to make sense. So I believe the last two work stoppages were necessary, not only justified, but necessary to save the industry. And if you look at the difference now, and you know this, James, you've been around, you look at the difference now with what Gary Bettman had to do his first 15, 20 years in the NHL was he had to be a firefighter. There were franchise problems after franchise problems after franchise problems. I think four of our former owners went to prison. Teams were threatening to move, fold. There's none of that now. You've got labor peace. You've got a long-term TV deal. You've got stability. There's none of that now. The league's never been in better shape. The hockey's never been better. Terrific. Now you look at it and say, do we need another market correction? I only see minor changes that might need to be made for either side. I don't see one issue, not one issue. And I may lament these words, but I do not see one issue on either side that would justify a work stoppage. So I'm optimistic. I believe we can extend this deal without losing any games, and we'll see if that happens.
Hey, before we let you go here, a story that's just kind of popped up here this morning. I don't know if you've seen it, but Sergei Bobrovsky and the Blue Jackets. Bobrovsky will not play tonight. Jarmo Kekalainen, their general manager, just stated in a release, says, quote, "There are certain expectations and values that we have established for our players that define our culture. An incident occurred in which Sergei failed to meet those expectations and values," end quote. Sounds like somebody was misbehaving, I guess.
Yeah, well, it could be just being late for a meeting even. You know, it depends on my teams. The penalties for being late to a meeting were pretty severe. You would have missed a game for sure just for being late to a meeting.
For a meeting?
Yeah.
You would have scratched.
Yeah, you're late for a bus or late for a meeting, you miss a game. So it could be that simple. It could be a late night. It could be breaking curfew, although very few teams check curfew. So I wouldn't speculate on the air what it could be, but I would say before you rush to judgment and think, oh, he did something really terrible, and my team sitting out a game would be just, if you were five minutes late for a power play meeting, that would be enough to sit out a game.
Sportsnet 650.